Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Okay, dear listener, well, this is not Eddie Miller, this is Monica Schaefer hosting today's show. If you've been listening to the first hour, you'll know that Eddie ran a marathon today. I don't know if it's past tense right now as we speak. It's probably past tense. I do hope that he finished that well and healthy and is recuperating well from that. It's a terrific accomplishment. Way to go, Eddie Miller. Okay, we're going to continue. We're just going to segue here from what the last thing we were talking about there was this the award that was given, the George Orwell Free Speech Award was given to James Sears, and he's a doctor in Canada who has been publishing this Your Ward News, a satirical paper, and really with brilliant satire in it. And it's clear that it's satire. And just one more detail on that before we segue from that to a satire that Nancy Hitt did quite a few years ago on another notorious hate speech book, but for some reason they turn it around and call us hateful when we bring attention to it by doing our own satire. Anyway, James Sears had been out. He had been on, what do you call it when you get let out of a jail sentence?
Probation.
So he had been given, what, a one-year jail term, and then he was let out after something like 4 months. And while he was out on probation, right, he was given this award, Paul. Take it from there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well he got out on the 14th of October, and we had a nice reading party for him outside the prison. And about a month later, we gave him the George Orwell Free Speech Award. And we did a video of it. And he was quite careful what he said, because he's not supposed to say anything critical of women or Jews until June 14th of this year. So he was careful. But anyway, they didn't like the fact he received the award. They didn't like the fact that I had given it to him. They didn't like the fact that a far-right lawyer, namely Doug Christie, those are their words, not mine, had initiated the award, so that they were all bent out of shape on all points, and so they accused him of breaching his bail conditions and parole conditions, and flung him back in prison for another 4 months. And this is very arbitrary. The only person he was not to associate with was his co-accused, Leroy Saint Germain. I was never mentioned. I had nothing to do with his conviction or anything like that, or his alleged offenses. This is just pure political vindictiveness. Kind of an interesting counterpoint. One of his cellmates, his cellmates are constantly changing, but one of his cellmates was in for his sentence was 9 weeks. And you might ask, well, what did he do to get 9 weeks? Well, he had stolen a van. He was in possession I think methamphetamines when he was picked up. And I believe he had tried to stab somebody with a screwdriver. Well, that gets you 9 weeks in prison. Writing satire, completely nonviolent offense, gets you a year. It shows you
unbelievable.
What
They're ridiculous.
Unbelievable, isn't it? And, the word revenge comes to mind when you the story of him being thrown back into prison. They didn't like him to be recognized in a positive way, and they had to have their revenge. Now, Nancy, I'd like for you to tell us about a satire, because we're talking about satire now, that you had mm-hmm. written a number of years back on a little, well, it's not such a little book, but it's a terrible book, written in 1941 by Theodore Kaufman, a New York Jew, and the title of that book was Germany Must Perish. Tell us what you did with that and what the purpose of what you did was.
Okay, what happened is I was mainly doing book reviews for the First Freedom for Olaf Childress down in Silver Hill, Alabama, and I often would order books from Dr. Fields, and he had this particular book, Germany Must Perish, by Theodore Kaufman. And as you say, it was written in July of 1941, months before FDR and his cronies conned the U.S. into another European war. Germany Must Perish, the copy I got was a 60-page paperback with a photo of the author and his map of eviscerated Germany. I don't know if the book can still be purchased from Dr. Fields down in Marietta, Georgia. In the introduction, or the preface, this is what Dr. Fields stated, and I would certainly agree. He says, "This is surely one of the most vicious, hate-dripping books ever written. Bear in mind that the German deportation of the Jews as wartime security risk did not begin until July the 11th of 1942. Thus, the Jews cannot claim that this book was in response to any alleged Holocaust because such an accusation had not been made at the time. Nevertheless, Kaufman calls for a Holocaust of the entire German race." This book prodded the war. It prodded the war into Germany, but it also stiffened the Germans to continue to fight to the death because of the content of this vile book. It was published in German and distributed in Germany, even though the author had made allegations that, you know, it was never to be published in German because he didn't want the German people, of course, to know what they were going to be facing. Kaufman was one of the so-called brain trust of the Roosevelt confab, and he was, listen to this, he was president of American Federation of Peace, PEAC. So what I did, I think it even shocked my editor somewhat when he came across this, because this is the way I wrote it. I called it basically Cowardly Proposals of 1941 was the title of my book review.
Well, it was actually what was the word? The pusillanimous or something?
Pusillanimous proposals.
Yeah.
But that means cowardly. So what I did, I think it even surprised Olaf when he read this, because this is the way I wrote it. Number one, immediately and completely disarm the Jewish army and have all armaments removed from Jewish territory. Number two, place all Jewish utility and heavy industrial plants under heavy guard and replace Jewish workers by those of Allied nationality. Number three, segregate the Jewish army into groups. Concentrate them in severely restricted areas and summarily sterilize them. Number four, organize the civilian population, both male and female, within territorial sectors and effect their sterilization. Number five, divide the Jewish army after its sterilization has been completed into labor battalions and allocate their services toward the rebuilding of those cities which they ruined. Number six, partition Israel and apportion its lands. The accompanying map gives some idea of possible land adjustments which might be made in connection with Israel's extinction. Number seven, restrict all Jewish civilian travel beyond established borders until all sterilization has been completed. Compel the Jewish population of the apportioned territories to learn the language of its area, and within 1 year to cease the publication of all books, newspapers, and notices in the Hebrew language, as well as to restrict Hebrew language broadcast and discontinue the maintenance of Hebrew language schools. Number 9. Make one exception to an otherwise severely strict enforcement of total sterilization by exempting from such treatment only those Jews whose relatives, being citizens of various victor nations, assume financial responsibility for their immigration and maintenance and moral responsibility for their actions. Then I clarified what I was writing. Does this list give credence to the aims of the Nazis? No, gentle reader. I took the liberty of substituting Jews for Germans, who these 9 vile proposals were directed at, and I copied each directive as written on pages 56 and 57 from the book Germany Must Perish by the American-born Jew Theodore N. Kaufman. That is absolutely what they want to do to the German people.
Nancy, I'm so glad that you had time before this break to tell us what was written in the original book, so that the FBI aren't knocking on your door now, and that we actually still will have you back after this commercial break. Yes, okay, we're going to continue with that after the break. See you on the other side.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something.
Well, I don't know about you listening out there, but for me, I'm still catching my breath after that riveting piece of satire by Nancy Hitt. And I guess there's some certain group of people that don't like it when the shoe is on the other foot. But really, what's the purpose of the satire? It's to bring attention to the original. And there's a great writer, a really good truth-telling warrior here in Canada that did something similar. And I think he did it without, I don't know if he had knowledge of your satire, Nancy, but he did a similar thing. His name is Arthur Topham. He published on his website, Radical Press, he published a satire of the book Germany Must Perish. And in the title, he just replaced the word Germany with Israel. And everywhere in the book, like he reprinted or republished the whole book, except everywhere where it says Germans, he replaced that with Jews. And where it said Germany, he replaced that with Israel. And so he did something very much along the lines of what you did, Nancy. And he did point out in the preface to that, and I saw it with my own eyes, he pointed out that it was satire or parody. I'm not sure which word he used, but it was clear that this was not his original work. He simply reprinted, but with these replaced words, Israel instead of Germany and Jews instead of Germans. They didn't like that. He went through years of battling the courts. They found him guilty. It was a jury, a trial by jury. They found him guilty. That was 2015. And anyway, so there's that story too. Paul, do you want to talk a little bit more about that or comment about it?
Only to say that the verdict, he was charged, there were two counts, and he was acquitted by the jury on one and found guilty on the other. It was a setback. And I think that one of the things that drives the enemies of free speech crazy is satire, laughing at them, mocking them. And that hurts more. I think good satire can be more effective than a direct denunciation. I think that's why they came after your war news and why they came after Arthur.
Yeah, that's right. So, Nancy, I want to hand it back to you to talk a little bit more about what happened, because you had just read us that wonderful piece, and then we went to the break. So would you like to carry on with what happened next, or did anything happen next? Were there any repercussions for you?
Oh, no, not at all.
So
I mean,
maybe
the paper I wrote for, these were the kinds of things that I think it shocked my editor, first of all, when he read it. I guess it came as a surprise to him, but he certainly supported anything like this that I would write. We exposed what we thought were, hatred against the white people, basically. That's what we were all about. Nothing happened at all, and I don't see how anything can happen when what you're taking something that is so horrible. And unfortunately, the majority of Americans have no idea that this was even ever published. They have no idea that this thing ever was published. It was probably part of FDR's and Morgenthau's program to just ruin the German people, send them back to being squatters on their own land. I think the best thing that happened with this, well, you could say the best thing, the fact that it was translated into German, it fortified the German people. That could be good or bad. That's the reason, you know, there was an unconditional surrender, another application which really was made the Germans fight to the bitter end, and then knowing what was being promised to them, which was no man's land and sterilization, mm-hmm. and you know, cities devastated. So I guess they just had to go ahead and fight to the bitter end until everybody died, I guess.
No,
yeah,
I think
go ahead.
Well, what's going on here, and you know, the book makes it quite clear, the elimination, basically the genocide of the German people within about 40 years. If you sterilize all the men and create those other conditions, within, you know, several decades, there'll be no more Germans. I mean, that there is a classic definition of genocide.
Absolutely.
100% genocide. And yet, was Theodor Kaufmann ever charged for hate speech? I mean, really, it's a rhetorical question. I don't think you have to answer that. But
well, I have a note. I have a little note here within the book review. It says that Germany Must Perish by Theodor Kaufmann was translated into German and distributed to perhaps 1 million soldiers. This vial fortified the resolve of Germans on the front lines who realized what the future might hold for them in their homeland. And, I mean, it's just absolute filth. It's just absolute hatred, revenge. At any rate, it's just absolute, just to eliminate the German people totally from the face of the earth is really what he was promoting.
Openly calling for the genocide of the German people and celebrating that by saying things like, you know, the German people are, I mean, they're just bad through and through. So the only way to solve this problem, the German problem, is to be rid of them totally. Now, you had mentioned that you don't think very many Americans, and for that matter, Canadians, knew about the book. However, I have seen, I don't have them in front of me now, these book reviews and commentaries in the mainstream media of the time, but I have read some of the comments coming from mainstream media at the time, and they were basically kind of like a complimentary to this book. Oh, interesting idea. Oh, yes, a you know, a swell plan or something like that. You know, they weren't, they didn't, the point is they didn't condemn him for calling for genocide. I just find it unbelievable that such a book could be written and then be more or less complimented, perhaps you could say promoted, by the fact that they're even covering it at all. I mean, I wonder how many mainstream media at the time covered your satire of it and said, gee, look, she's just bringing this to our attention by doing this satire on this book that was written back then. No, and in the case of Arthur Topham, you know, they just make him look really bad in the mainstream media. They smear him, make it sound like this is his hate-filled diatribe, when really his purpose also was to bring attention to the original. But again, when the shoe is on the other foot, certain group of people don't like that very much. Now, you were saying in response to my question, were there any repercussions for you? And you said, no, that's great. And that's how it should be. But I don't know if you were to do it now, if that would be the same, because laws everywhere, including Canada, and I want Paul to talk about that too, there are laws being brought in left, right, and center now that are actually really undermining our freedom of speech, our ability to not just think critically, but speak critically of what we see, you know, drawing conclusions from facts and evidence of what we see going on. And if we just point out facts and talk about the conclusions we have reached that don't go along with the mainstream narrative or the Hollywood version of events, or whether that's history or current events, there's all kinds of laws coming in. So, Paul, I'm going to hand it over to you to talk about what's going on right now in Canada about this, maybe it's a, is it a Holocaust denial law, and how are they bringing this in, and what's the status of it right now?
Well, there's a lot about this I'm not quite clear about, but the basic outline is this. When the government brought down its budget a couple of weeks ago, included in it is the...
Yeah, okay, Paul, I guess you've heard that, the music, but this is where we're going to continue on after the bottom of the hour, the break, and so hold that thought. We'll see you on the other side.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he'll meet Sunday with Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Secretary of State Antony Blinken. They will be the first senior members of the Biden administration to visit Ukraine since the invasion began 2 months ago. His announcement comes as Russian forces attack a steel plant in Mariupol. The Kremlin says but for the plant, it has captured the port city. Ukrainian officials say there are about 2,000 troops inside the plant, with civilians sheltering in an underground tunnel. Satellite photos from Maxar Technologies reveal what appears to be a second mass grave site near Mariupol that has prompted Ukrainian accusations that Russians are trying to conceal the slaughter of civilians in the city. There has been no response from the Kremlin about the photos. Wall Street closed Friday, continuing its losing ways for the year. This is USA Radio News.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-444-9336. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-444-9336. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-444-9336. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-444-9336. 800-444-9336.
French President Emmanuel Macron has the lead going into Sunday's runoff election over his rival Marine Le Pen. He would be the first French president in 2 decades to win a second term if successful. A Black Lives Matter activist in Memphis, Tennessee, will not face charges that she illegally registered to vote. Shelby County prosecutors dropping charges against Pamela Moses, who was convicted last November and sentenced to prison this past January to 6 years. Moses sought a new trial in February, which was granted due to the Corrections Department not turning over a necessary document to prosecutors. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene was hostile while testifying during a hearing on Friday to decide whether or not she is eligible to run for re-election. Voters in her district, using a rarely used section of the 14th Amendment, said Greene helped facilitate the January 6, 2021 insurrection, disrupting the certification of Joe Biden as winner of the 2020 election. Georgia's Secretary of State will ultimately make the decision. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Okay. We're on the last half of the last hour of this show on this beautiful day out here. Anyway, I'm going to bring Paul back in to, he was just starting to tell us what's going on in Canada right now with some kind of a hate speech law, or now they're actually going to spell it out that we can't even question our history. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. They have promised in the budget to amend the criminal code, the so-called hate law, section 319, to add denial of the Holocaust, minimizing the Holocaust, or apologizing for it. It would be a criminal offense, but the specifics are not out there yet. Like, what would be the sentence? And also, are the defenses that are available under the hate law available to this? One of the defenses under the hate law is truth. So there's a lot that's mysterious, but this has been a long time goal of the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith to make Holocaust denial a criminal offense. And when we start the program talking about Holocaust denial and so on, it's very squishy. When people hear so-and-so is a Holocaust denier, they think, well, he must be everybody knows it happened. So if he says that no Jews died in World War II, the person must be either crazy or badly motivated. I mean, why would he say that? So we have to find out what does it mean to deny the Holocaust? For instance, supposing you question the numbers. Like, I don't think anybody questions that some Jews died in World War II. Some Jews were executed, were murdered. That's a fact. But if you want to question the numbers, here's another thing that defies all belief. We're told that part of the Holocaust religion is that this was the greatest crime in all of human history. And I think that's probably the easiest one to sink. The greatest crime in all of human history. Well, greatest has anything to do with numbers. Just in the 20th century, Stalin starved to death between 8 and 10 million Ukrainians during the Holodomor of 1932-33. Mao Zedong murdered probably over 60 million of his own countrymen. Well, 60 million, 8 or 10 million is bigger than 6. So how can this be the greatest crime of all human history? See, the Holocaust really is tribal history. And that's Jewish tribal history. And like most tribal histories, it's kind of a self-centered and puts the tribe at the center of things. So that's okay as long as it's their tribal history. The problem is we are being forced to believe it, or at least pretend we believe it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we can't even call it history if we want to think of history as what actually happened. It's their tribal myth. I would agree with that. And you're certainly correct that there's other crimes. There are horrendous genocides that really have taken place. And if somebody denies those, nobody goes to jail for those. And those are things that actually happened. But the one that there's no evidence for, people get persecuted and go to jail. And on this numbers game, when Jewish writers write different accounts of what actually happened, and I can tell you from our trial, because we brought this information into the trial, that their own accounts of what actually happened, what were the murder weapons, and how many, they vary wildly. The numbers vary wildly, the methods vary wildly. I mean, at one time they said that the prisoners were put onto conveyor belts and then electrocuted. And then another time they said there were gas vans being used. And I mean, all kinds of wild stories. And somebody wrote 26 million, then somebody else wrote, and these are Jewish writers, somebody else wrote, I think 1 million or something. None of them get charged. They don't get charged with Holocaust denial. But if those of us, Gentiles, who question the official story, start to just question any part of it. And speaking of this squishy law, as you called it, I like that word. I always called it a nebulous law in Germany. It's nebulous because they don't spell out what are the facts. So if they don't spell out what are the facts and where you can get the information to know what the facts are, then how do you know when you're committing a crime? How do you know when you're quote-unquote denying the Holocaust or minimizing, the so-called evils of National Socialist Germany, and those are the things that are in that law over there, that, minimizing or aggrandizing their achievements or anything like that. So anyway, it's nebulous, it's squishy. But the important thing I wanted to also bring out about this new law that they want to bring out in Canada is that I heard rumors that they're embedding it in the budget bill. Is that true, Paul?
Well, I believe so. And I still don't understand how that can be. Because it's separate legislation, it's criminal code. Budget is money. How much they're going to, what they're going to spend and where they're going to spend it. I think that remains to be seen, but the reports I've seen say it's part of the budget.
Yeah.
The only way we, place we can challenge it would be in committee when they send the budget to committee to for study. Now, the committee, well, I guess, would mostly be studying the dollars and cents, but this is quite up in the air, and it's very sneaky rather than bringing it forth as a separate piece of legislation.
Yes, very sneaky indeed, and it kind of reminds me of hearing about all these omnibus bills in the United States where there might be 300 different pieces of legislation just lumped together, so that those representatives or so-called representatives of the people, they half of them, I'm sure they wouldn't know half of what's in those bills, and they're just told how to vote and they vote and then all these things get snuck in. So yeah, not really good in terms of functioning democracy, whatever that is supposed to be. I remember hearing a quote from Ezra Pound. He said, "Democracy is Jew speak for a country controlled by Jews." I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah. So yeah, I'd like to talk about this new law that they're trying to push through in Tennessee. I don't know if Nancy, if you've heard about this, and if not, I can tell you what's in it here, but this new facet of political correctness about all citizens must now comply with a law which very broadly defines anti-Semitism. Any statement concerning Jewish ownership or control of media or corporation may be interpreted as an attack on all Jews and is thus a crime. I mean, really, can you believe it? So just a statement that you point out that the Jews own or control the media or corporations, that is a crime, or it could be if this law gets passed. And I've heard that it's almost there. Have you heard anything about that, Nancy? That's in Tennessee.
No, only what Eddie sent. I read that. It's terrifying. And, you know, I think all of the states are probably going to be pushing for this, unfortunately. It's kind of like when the mayors get together, they all decide on the same designs of the downtown cities. And I'm fearful that this will be something that a lot of Christian Zionists are going to applaud this.
Well, I know that Eddie always really he rails about that, because that's exactly true, that some of the Christian Zionists are the most duped on, you know, who the Chosenites are, and really they're the, you know, self-proclaimed Chosenites. But it's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it? It's doublespeak to this Judeo-Christian, like, how can that be? That's two opposites put together in one word. So, or Christian Zionist, that's also, it's just two opposites put together. And I think this is by way of deception that this has happened, that so many people just don't know what is really going on and who is serving whom and who is serving the devil here in all of this. And so I hear the music for this is our last break, and we'll be right back on the other side to talk about these things and more and wrap it up.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today. And gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
A Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Okay, dear listeners, we're into the last segment of our show today, and I've really enjoyed having our guests, Paul Fromm and Nancy Hitt. And just would like to segue from what we were talking about, this new law in Tennessee, which I hope is not going to pass, but it seems to be partway there. And it states that it is not prohibiting free speech, but there are no restrictions on any prosecution if a person is deemed to have violated the law. And I just read part of the law before the break about, it's basically that you have to comply with the law, which broadly defines anti-Semitism. And anti-Semitism seems to be that if you are pointing out Jewish ownership and control of media or corporation, that is interpreted as an attack on all Jews and is thus a crime. And it also says that any communication in print or art that objects to details about the Holocaust or portrays Jews with any distinct ethnic feature, this would be cause for condemnation under this law. So really it's very broad and squishy, as Paul says. And but yet they state, oh, they're not prohibiting free speech. No, not at all. Right. Yeah. Okay. From there, I would like to go to this, The Curse of Anti-Semitism by Dr. Austin App. That's something that you brought up, Nancy, in an email. Yes. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Go ahead. I met a person who was very interested in Germany and these issues involving the Holocaust and I guess Jewish revenge, I guess you might call it, for anyone who questions the Holocaust or anything to do with the ownership of that they proper things that they own. But one of the most interesting pamphlets I did have printed, he sent it by PDF form. I had it printed and have read it from cover to cover. The author is someone I have read before, Dr. Austin App. He was born in this country, but he was actually a Catholic who was of Sudeten German background, and the book that I had read previously was about the terrible treatment of the Sudetens after the war, how they were shipped out, put in camps, sent to various parts of Berlin, and many of them were killed. But that was the one book that I had read. But this was a new book to me, and I've read it from cover to cover, and it's the table of contents are a list of people who have either lost their jobs or even their lives, their careers, for speaking out, questioning, or exposing the Jewish proclivity for revenge and other evil thinking or maybe bad morals. And he lists on this long list about 30 different people. He talks about Shakespeare, who created Shylock, and he talks about famous authors who came into problems stating anything about the Jews, such as Chaucer, Bernard Shaw, Lord Byron, Thornton Wilder, Archibald MacLeish, T.S. Eliot. Of course, we know about, many people know about Ezra Pound, even George Washington, Ulysses Grant, of course, Henry Ford. And I remember the controversy about Father Coughlin. Pardon me. But I probably didn't know what it was all about. And most people know also about Senator McCarthy. He was actually more or less exposing the communists, but in so doing, he was offending the Jews because so many of them are communist. But the one I wanted to talk about is in the last chapter, the very last person he wrote about. He documents these. He gives a biography of all of these people and how they got in trouble. And he talks about James Forrestal. Now, many of the listeners will probably know who Forrestal was. He was the first Secretary of Defense in 1947 to 1949. And he started out as under Roosevelt. But what happened is he wanted the war to be handled in a humane treatment for the Germans. That probably got them kind of riled up. But the worst part of it was, as far as the Jewish people were concerned, he incurred the wrath of the Zionists by opposing the American government's support of the Jewish occupation of Palestine and stirring up the Arab world against the U.S. That was their opinion. In their vengeance, the Zionists selected Drew Pearson to lead the vicious campaign to destroy Forrestal. And the the League of Bina Brit assigned David Katz, who was a writer for the Communist Daily Worker, and other people to attack him and even follow him from day to day. They wrote a lot of scathing anti-Forrestal reports about him. And eventually he resigned, ended up in a mental institute. This is where they wanted him. And he supposedly, while unguarded, he crashed through a window of the 16th floor onto the roof of the third floor at the mental institute or hospital in Bethesda, and he was killed. But many people think that that was not a suicide. So that's kind of these are the kinds of stories that are in this pamphlet.
Oh, isn't that interesting about that suicide? I've heard of a few other people being suicided. Oh, excuse me, did I say being suicided? Yeah.
Yeah,
Paul, did you want to... Yeah, exactly. Bullet from the back of the head or multiple. And I mean, just, yeah, how many times does that happen? Or that they have a mysterious accident or they suddenly die of a heart attack or other means. Cancer, which we know that there are these things that can be done to give people cancer or give people a heart attack without it being detected. And so, this is a common occurrence. Paul, did you want to comment?
I think that's very interesting. The fanatical reaction against Admiral Forrestal, with the attempts to try to destroy him. Senator McCarthy, you were saying that was because many Jews were communists, but also Senator McCarthy was very concerned about the infiltration by Soviet spies of the American government, and many of the Adam spies were Jews.
Well, somebody who got an comeuppance was Dorothy Thompson, and I do remember her name as being a very active liberal, actually, writer, I don't think my parents thought too much of her back in the 40s. And she was a prominent writer. And she was anti-Germany. She wanted to go to war. She was against Lindbergh. She wanted him to go to prison. But the ironic thing is that she ended up visiting Palestine and became the enemy of the Jews because she did not like the treatment that was being meted out to the Palestinians by the Zionists. So ultimately, of course, she lost her career. She gave up her career as a journalist because they would not abide her stating that these people were being abused and the Palestinians were being abused. So she was considered an anti-Semitic writer after she had really been against Germany and against Lindbergh.
Well, that's interesting. Well, that's like she had like a conversion of her own and suddenly realized, you know, what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, I find that just very interesting. I've not heard of her, but they're absolutely ruthless. You know, whenever I hear a thing like this, I want to comment. And this is in the land of the home of the brave and the land of the free.
Right.
You know, freer than Canada, but still not decent freedom.
They seem to find other ways of persecuting people. Maybe there is the First Amendment, and so they theoretically there's freedom of speech. But I do know that people get taken down in other ways if they are going against the certain group of people too hard or too much, or pointing out, you know, their ownership, their power, whatever, right, Nancy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Well, here's a little short thing about, well, I'll make it short. Dorothy Thompson, who had forsworn herself most of her life champion Talmudist, and so had become a celebrity, ruined it all in the end by becoming even-handed in the Israeli-Arab quarrel. The case of Colonel Lindbergh is far less complicated, but far more frightening. He was the son of one of the wisest and most honorable congressmen of the same name America ever had. In 1927, Charles Lindbergh burst upon the national and world consciousness, the perfect meeting of man and moment. So wrote the National Review in Charles A. Lindbergh. The lone eagle, Lindy, until September the 11th of 1941, was the most popular and inspiring hero America ever had, and beyond that, he was a world hero. But he got on the wrong side of the Jews, and he became known as an anti-Semite because he was a pacifist.
And he was go ahead, Paul. I was just going to say he was on the right side of history. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he was so right. I mean, yes. America should never have been in that war. But but he loyally served the U.S. government as an advisor during World War II, and then basically retired to Hawaii and went very, very quiet. Another great man driven out of public life. His voice, he had much to say.
Well, that's we're just at the top of the second hour, and this has gone by like so fast. And I want to thank my guests, Paul Fromm and Nancy Hitt, for joining us today. And Eddie will be back next week. And I hope that you enjoyed today's show. I certainly enjoyed hosting it. And thank you so much. And I guess say over and out. Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
You did a great job, Monica.
Oh, thanks, Paul. All right. Goodbye, then. Until next week, until we hear from you again.